Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the February 28th edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Don't forget to pick up those tickets for the All-Day Agricultural Outlook. We'll have a dirty dozen. Well, that's 13. Let's call it a baker's dozen of grains analysts with us next week at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Plus, we'll do the weather with Eric Snodgrass and talk about the value of farmland. That with Murray Wise, all for $30. How can you get any better than that? Oh, well, you could, because we'll do Beef House roll and coffee in the morning. And if you've not been there for a Beef House meal ever before, we'll do that at the noon hour, all for $30. You can join the fun, 800-898-1065 or willag.org. Now, let's turn our attention to the marketplace and Commodity Week. Our panelists this week include Elaine Cubb. She's from Mastering the Grain Markets out of Elkhorn, Nebraska. Joe Vaclavic is here from Standard Grain. He's in Gallatin, Tennessee. Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting is in Atchison, Kansas. And Chad Hart is at Iowa State University there in Ames, Iowa. Elaine, I want to get a couple of items from each of you, and we'll get your list first. So what are the topics we ought to discuss for the day?
Well, it might be a little bit too early in the year to worry about planting season, but I think we could discuss if there are any implications to the excessive snow cover that we have kind of all over the upper Corn Belt this year.
I think that is one that the meteorologists have been telling me about for a while, so we should definitely do that. Joe Vaclavic at Standard Grain, your thoughts?
We are in well-supplied markets. We've got big carries in the market. We saw some significant deliveries against these March futures contracts. I think the timing of this sell-off we've seen here as of late is kind of odd. This is usually a time of year where row crop markets in particular can build premium ahead of the planting season. But for the moment here, kind of down and out on really oversupply, lack of exports. Same old story.
And Mike Zuzulo.
You know, I think the dovetailing with what Joe just talked about, along with Elaine, is to try and unpack why we made a new all-time low in the Bloomberg Grain Index. Is it funds or is it fundamentals? And I think that's what I'm most curious about and conversing with the others on.
And Chad Hart from Iowa State, what are your thoughts?
Well, dovetailing on the previous two, let's talk about that export pace as we look out there. You know, what we had was some fairly positive news today, but it didn't seem to turn around the markets any.
Let's start, Mike, with you on the Bloomberg low. What are you thinking this means?
You know, I think Joe hit a real big point about the demand and well-supplied markets, but I look at the supply-demand fundamentals, especially in the corn, and even in the hogs for a change, we saw China as the number two buyer for pork on the weekly export sales, even at, what, almost a 60% tariff rate at this point still. And I think the demand fear is more of a perception, more of a fear. It's not reality. And I think it is more fund driven at this point, Todd, and especially given that the hogs and the wheat have led the declines. They both have fallen almost the identical amount of percentage points since their February highs, respectively. And I think whenever I see something like that, I'm inclined to think that it is fund led, it's money manager led, and that perception versus that reality, we're going to have to figure out when that's going to come around and adjust accordingly. And I think that's where Elaine's point is well taken.
Well, do you suppose they actually have missed African swine fever and the demand it may create in the Chinese economy for U.S. pork?
Yeah, I mean, when China said that this week they were going to set up five zones in that massive country, you know, their surface area in their countries as big as the United States, when they said they're going to fit five zones to control their hog traffic flow, you could tell that they had smuggling and inspection issues. And I think that this is balled up and wrapped around African swine fever, to give you a short answer, is that, yeah, I think that perception is directly related back to that. And that's why we didn't come around and take the markets to new highs in the soybeans when we heard that 10 million metric ton number. I mean, that's 360 some million bushels, and that would go a long way if it was at the expense of South American supplies in erasing our deficit on our exports. So I think that African swine fever is right there in the mix of things, and that's where the perception is the strongest, because it's so hard to get good information from China right now.
If I remember correctly, that's about a third of the expected exports to China. Chad Hart, you wanted to talk about the pace, and what does it look like?
Well, as was mentioned here, the idea is that that step would go a long way to filling in the hole. But, you know, as we're looking at the export data right now, the report that came out today, initially bullish, but you could, I would argue, also see the cracks in the demand as we look out there. Soybean side, we're still running well below last year's pace, with the vast majority of that being the downfall from the Chinese tariffs. But we're also seeing corn, even though we had a great week, if you will, our pace is slowing down in comparison to what we saw last year. And so where we did have a sizable gap on export pace compared to last year, now we're about down to about par. And on the livestock side, we've seen those exports drop off as well. And so I think, you know, there's a little bit of fear about global demand starting to turn in the wrong direction here.
I want to turn to you, Joe Vaclavic. You said that the timing seems odd, that usually we would be doing something slightly different at this point. What do you mean?
Well, in a lot of cases, historically, if you were to pull up any of the seasonal charts, really, you know, ahead of plantings, it would not be unreasonable or surprising to see the markets build in some premium ahead of plantings. And, you know, you'll usually see that some of your best prices in the corn market and in the soybean market, you know, in these spring months. And we just haven't seen any of that now at all. And a lot of the things that we discussed, I think, are the cause for that. I mean, the oversupply situation, the export situation is really kind of intriguing, because, you know, we talk about what's been sold to China, what may be sold to China, but this is all just to get us up to those USDA projections. And even if you hit projections, you're still at a 900 million carryout. I mean, we could overshoot projections by a couple hundred million and probably still be oversupplied. So I just think that the market has a lot of problems. It's got more problems than it did last year.
Yeah, Lane Cub, we had the last trading day of the month of February, and the fundamental supply, of course, of soybeans is enormous at this point, well over 900 million bushels. However, on the tech side, the month of February was an outside down month. Those two things combined don't sound particularly good for the future of that marketplace.
No, and the month of February is, of course, as everyone knows, very important for setting benchmark rates for crop insurance. And one of the pieces of good news there is that there was fairly low volatility in the movement of these new crop prices here at the end of the month. So in theory, farmer premium for these federally, you know, subsidized crop insurance policies should be favorable compared to last year at this time. But let me just play devil's advocate to something Joe said there, is that usually this time of year we do see some premium, we see some good opportunities, and perhaps better prices than you'll see later on. Well, what if that is the case this year? What if the prices we're seeing now are the good opportunities?
How likely do you think that is?
Well, I'm not terribly bearish, actually. I think... Actually, I could start to make, previously I was extremely neutral, but I think I could start to make a bullish case for corn back on something I mentioned at the top of the show, is all of this snow cover. And it is too early, but if the polar vortex persists longer and longer, at some point here in the month of March, we might start to worry about getting a late planting season and more acres shifting into, you know, soybeans or God knows what.
So the meteorologists that we talk to on the air every day have been concerned about this, surprisingly enough, for the better part of a month now, most of February, thinking that we have a wet pattern, that would be the snow cover. We also have a very cold pattern. I think part of their concern is flooding at the beginning of the season. The cold pattern is going to persist at least through the middle of the month at this point, and they're not sure what it looks like after that, but most of them are thinking that that should be wet. Iowa, in particular, has gotten some serious snow totals. Chad, I don't know, how deep is the snow there at Iowa State University?
It's pretty darn deep. And, you know, as you mentioned, the idea is that as we look across, especially let's call it central to north central Iowa, what we have seen throughout the month of February and the last part of January was an incredible amount of snow come in, along with an incredible amount of cold. You know, as I'm looking at the the 2 week out forecast, there isn't a time here in central Iowa where we're going to get back to normal temperatures. We're going to stay below average, you know, below average temperatures with above average precipitation.
Hey, I'm going to ask you about something else. I suppose you talk to the policy specialist there on campus at Iowa State often enough. This week, when Donald Trump made his trip to talk to Kim Jong-un about denuclearizing North Korea, how related is that, do you suppose, to the Chinese trade negotiations that are happening? And what importance should we lay on the fact that Mr. Trump walked out of those negotiations, whether that be for good or ill, either one?
Well, there is a linkage there, but the idea is that as you're thinking about it here, one does not necessarily depend upon the other. Definitely in dealing with China, one of the things that we look for them to continue to help us with is dealing with North Korea. I'm sure that is part of the discussions as we're looking at talking about trade issues and other issues with China as we're moving forward there. But it's not that it has to be part and parcel with some sort of agreement with North Korea. And so with the president walking away from the table, I think that was not an unexpected thing to happen here. I think that they recognize, and you're seeing this even with the China discussion, that these issues that we're dealing with North Korea, with China, take, you know, multiple meetings to address here. This was the first step along the way to finding any sort of agreement on either of those issues with any, either of those countries.
Joe, has the trade fatigued of the up and down of the marketplace as it's related to the trade negotiations, and is part and parcel of what we're looking at now in terms of the lower price for commodities, and that may exist for only a few days, I suppose, the fundamentals of the marketplace really beginning to build back in?
Yeah, I think so. I think the trade is exhausted of the headlines. I mean, you got to think about the situation here as it relates to soybeans. We still got soybean tariffs, yet China's buying beans in a time of year when they usually wouldn't really buy a whole lot from the U.S. at all. So, I mean, if the trade war ended tomorrow and China dropped the tariffs, is a whole lot really going to change? Is China going to come to the U.S. contra-seasonally and bail us out of this monster carryout that we've got headed our way? I just don't know if that's going to be the case. And I don't know if China is ready at all to concede on these structural issues, these IP issues, these technology issues. It really just kind of feels to me like they're buying time here. You know, they bought some soybeans. Great. I that's not what Trump's after. That's not what the U.S. is after. We're after real structural reform here. And it just doesn't appear that the U.S. is going to back down. And I don't know that China is either.
So we've got some time that we'll have to wait that out. I suppose that the marketplace, Elaine, is coming to that conclusion. And that then turns to the carryout numbers. One that's really quite big for soybeans. For corn, on the other hand, the $1.7 billion doesn't seem to be overly burdensome. Is that your opinion?
No, that's true. I think the rule of thumb is, like, if you have a less than a 10% stocks-to-use ratio, you'd start to get really bullish. And it's not less than that. It's, you know, 11.8% stocks-to-use ratio, so it's fine. I believe that the industry feels like there is enough corn in the supply chain that we're not getting, you know, a premium there. People worried about a supply shortage at this point. But certainly we see, you mentioned the two differences, or these two different markets behaving very differently, corn and soybeans. We see this very clearly in basis. Corn basis is extremely strong for this time of year. Whereas soybean basis, I think that's where you're really going to see any confirmation of any real change in this trade scenario, which, you know, obviously hasn't really changed. And we still see extremely weak basis, particularly in the Western Corn Belt. And like you mentioned, if this persists into next year, that weak basis is likely to persist.
I think, Todd, at this point, what I'm hearing and what I still have unresolved is the fact that the November bean dees corn ratio just made its highest high since June of last year, when we had a meal rally led by Rotterdam and Argentina's prices, you know, skyrocketing on tight crops. And so that doesn't help me with the fundamentals versus the funds. And the ag attaché for United States and Canada came out today and said that the Canadian wheat stocks are at a 10-year low because of such strong demand to China in terms of wheat exports out of Canada into China. And so when I throw that on top of the fact that the 60% of the hogs in the world are in China, and if they have as big of a problem as we think they may have, just something's got to give here, that especially when prices are dropping to these levels, I don't think you have to worry about demand erosion. The market is telling us that we're not going to have any demand problems at all if they keep these prices this low. I guess that's a very contrarian way to look at it, but from being in the commodity markets as long as I've been, I know the funds have really done a job on how these prices trade, but I got to think at some point the supply-demand fundamentals will come back for the medium term and come back for the hedger. And the biggest fear I have is the dollar goes sharply higher and the Chinese currency goes sharply lower because we do bomb out with the U.S.-China trade negotiations. But here again, that did not happen after the North Korea-U.S. split in the overnight markets. And so something just doesn't add up to me when it comes to the analysis.
Hey, come back to the acreage ratio, or the corn to soybean ratio, and what it means for acreage in this spring. What does that tell farmers to do anything, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think the Federal Reserve in Minneapolis, and I've even started to see it, the Kansas City had a new report out at the middle of the month. I think I'm starting to see, along with some of the client conversations, that the banks will play a lot bigger role. I think it was Wells Fargo that was at an event in California, I believe, last week, and their ag economist said that they were not just jumping on handing out loans just because of the crop insurance, that they really wanted to look at the equity side. So I do think that this ratio plays a role, and I've already had a couple calls this week about taking a higher level of crop insurance on beans, pushing it to 90 or 95%, which is very odd because most of the time soybean crop insurance pays a lot less frequently than the corn does. So I do think that you're trimming these corn acres at this point.
I think the payout ratio is 0.89 or 89% for corn and 69% for soybeans. That may be a state of Illinois ratio. I don't know whether you have those numbers off the top of your head for Iowa, Chad, but are you thinking, I know you are, much about that acreage mix in Iowa and how it may or may not change for this year?
Well, I tell you the truth, I'm not thinking about it much here in Iowa, but I'm watching the Great Plains. I think as we're looking here, to me, the big area of shifting is going to be north South Dakota down Nebraska, Kansas, where we sort of, if you will, missed a shot for winter wheat to grab some of that. There's a lot of soybean area from last year in those four states that is maybe looking for a new home here. And that was, I think, when USDA put out their numbers, sort of where they came up with this idea of a lot going to corn coming out of soybeans. Which goes back to Elaine's point, that happens only if Mother Nature allows it to happen.
All right. So Elaine, are you at the same point that you're thinking there'll be more corn acres there?
Yeah. So actually, to confirm what Chad has said, all of the seed salesmen, word on the ground anecdotally, there was thoughts of 10% more corn acres here in eastern South Dakota, North Dakota kind of areas. And if you do have a late spring, that also takes out your spring wheat option, which people like to get planted early. So if you don't have an early spring, yeah, you just keep on taking these acres away from the intended corn acres and probably getting shunted into soybean.
Okay, so I'm going to play you all off of each other. And Joe, I'm going to get your numbers here, but I want to make sure I've got this right. Mike, you're thinking that the soybean acres aren't going to go down as much as people think because the corn acres aren't going to go up based on the ratio, correct?
Correct.
Right. Gary Schnitke is thinking the same thing based on what the ratios say, and he thinks that holds across the Midwest. I know I talked to him earlier in the week, and I've got Elaine and Chad on the flip side, along with USDA, which in its Ag Forum numbers punched up, 3 million more acres for corn.
And I can't speak for Chad here, but my answer is weather dependent.
Weather dependent, right. And I think Chad's in that same boat. How about you, Joe Vaclavec?
I don't know that the soybean market has done enough to discourage enough acreage at this point. I mean, I know what the ratios say, and the ratios say we should see more corn, but you've got just a super high soil moisture level throughout not only the Corn Belt, but the Southeast, throughout the plains, throughout everywhere. I think that that's maybe bodes well for more soybean acreage. Spring wheat prices have lost 50 cents a bushel since October for new crop delivery. Could that steer more acreage into beans? I don't know. I don't know that November soybeans at $9.43 today, given the weather, have done enough to reduce acreage in the way that they really need to.
Okay, I'm going to ask a quick question and go across the board, and I'll start with you, Joe, on this one. On new crop soybeans, should producers take advantage of the price now or a price rally that would come in the next month?
Maybe both. I don't know. I don't know where every producer is right now in regard to marketing. I mean, I would like to have a little bit sold at current levels, despite the fact that I don't like the prices and they're toward the lower end of where we've been the last 4 or 5 years. But gosh, you look at the carryout numbers and you look at what some of the projections could be. I mean, things could get much, much uglier. That being said, if the market did rally, say 50 cents and they put a 10 in front of it, you know, ahead of plantings, I'd probably be a seller of a much more significant amount of bushels. And then weather, as always, is the ultimate wild card. I mean, we've gone so many years now without a weather problem. You know, we haven't really discussed that a whole lot, but gosh, that yield number has more potential to move the needle on the balance sheets than anything. And that's really the name of the game when it comes to this stuff.
Yeah, Lane Cub, and I suppose I'm thinking about incremental sales here too.
Yeah, that's why I like the answer of both. But yes, I think it's okay to be a little aggressive here. Get something sold because there is so much downside risk. I mean, there's the risk that these headlines about the trade thing could start getting uglier. I mean, we could start to get bearish again. So I think it makes sense to take off some of that risk.
Mike Zuzulo?
I would do it only with a weekly close below 895 in lead month beans, because that takes out a major trend line support on the monthly chart, Todd, and I would only do it and recommend doing it no matter where you were sold at with bought puts in the new crop November. And I would strongly recommend not selling any options at this point, puts or calls, and especially calls at this early stage, especially with at-the-money soybean option volatility of 12% on my screen, and that's the second lowest in 5 years. It's just you treat options, in my opinion, like you do futures in terms of volatility. You buy low volatility, you sell high volatility, and I think that's one of the things that really concerns me about 2019 is that we get too negative in the markets, especially as we get into the planting season and the funds have already done their business. And I think you have to be really, really careful about that in 2019. And I think that's a major difference between this year and last year, is that we could really have some different price action based upon what that perception, that reality about demand is.
And Chad Hart.
Yep, I'm going to agree on, yeah, we're staring at a different market here. I mean, just comparing the two crops, as we mentioned, the ratio, you know, has been shifting its way back towards beans. But when I look at, you know, those insurance prices, we're staring at $4 corn being insured versus basically what, $9.50 beans, where last year it was $4 and $10.16. And so that's definitely pushing towards corn here. So with that in mind, I guess I would play it out a little longer. I'd agree, yeah, do a little bit of both, but I'm leaning more towards waiting a little bit into March to see where beans can take us, to see if we can make any progress with China. Because to tell you the truth, I think if we don't make any progress, we're going to stay about where we are. But we do have the potential, if China does move and buys a few more beans, to have a little bit of a rally here to play in.
I want to do the same thing, but with old crop corn, not new crop, but old crop corn. And Chad, maybe you can give me some idea of how much of an impact the snow cover has had on the ability of producers to move corn into the system, and what that means for basis currently, and once we begin to open it up.
Well, as I mentioned before, I think Elaine mentioned, basis is very strong right now and continues to be. The weather issues here are definitely, you know, causing some transportation problems, and that's also helping build our basis along. And so while we have seen some weakness on the future side, we've been offsetting some of that with some of the strength in the basis, especially at some of our ethanol plants across the state. And so when I'm looking here, there are some opportunities to get some old crop corn moved if you can get it out of the bin.
All right, so go ahead and make the sales and get it moved if you can move it. If you can't, should you go ahead and make a forward sale?
I would be looking at that. One of the things I have been impressed with is, again, not only the basis strength on the nearby, but as we're working out a couple of months, we have seen those tighten up as well.
Mike Zuzulo?
You know, that's where the Gulf price in corn sitting at 420 versus the futures price at 360 plus, it just shows me that we've got a demand base and the export base intact. Yes, we are going into a real tough season with South American corn coming on in probably another 60, 90 days. But right now, with the current difference between exports year to date and the marketing year on week 25, we're running about 300 million bushels higher than what USDA projects. And that's a big number. So I would be very cautious and would not recommend any cash sales of corn. I think it's still the best value out there. And I would say that from another perspective, Todd, and that is the wheat has been beat up so badly and corn has been inflicted so much pain because of wheat. There is a discount in cash corn right now. If you called me and said, I need to protect downside and I have to do it, then I would just slap on July puts or sell July futures with a stop because the margin last I looked was $700 for hedgers. That's 14 cents a bushel. It's pretty low to hedge corn right now. But I am not a fan of selling cash grain right now in the corn market.
How about you, Joe Vaklevic? And then, of course, Elaine, you can just jump in.
This is what typically happens in a big carry, well-supplied market. December 18 futures in the couple of weeks prior to expiration were in this same spot, 360s. March futures have drifted down to where the DEIS futures went off, essentially. And that's a classic thing that happens in these sort of bear markets. I do kind of agree with what Mike said. I'm not bearish the corn market. I think that because volatility is so low, options are very cheap. I would probably rather pivot off some sort of option strategy for either May or July rather than sell the cash bushels right now and maybe take my chances that you see some sort of weather rally during the spring or summer or just any rally for any reason. We don't need a reason to necessarily retrace what we've just lost. You could probably tack 20 cents back on this thing without any real story. So I'm not thrilled about making a whole lot of old crop sales here. That being said, I'm sure that there are people out there who have done a whole lot of nothing for this 18 crop, and it's probably too late for you. But on those that have done a little bit more marketing and are down to say half or less of the crop even, you know, I'm not interested in selling. I'd probably rather pivot off some sort of affordable option strategy.
Yeah, there may be some kind of rally coming down the pipe, but these strong basis opportunities do feel like limited time opportunities because we've spent this whole show talking about there are large inventories and there's not really a shortage and there's enough ending stocks. So when the grain does move logistically, when the winter is over and it starts moving, I suspect, like Chad said, the basis could easily weaken. So if there was, if folks are willing to do these strategies, locking in a basis now and doing these other option strategies that Mike and Joe are suggesting, that might be the way to go.
Okay, let's get a final word from each of you. I think Joe Vaklevic from Standard Grain. I'll start with you for the day.
I'll finish with what I started with. I mean, these are well-supplied markets with big carries, big deliveries. Weather is always going to be a risk every single year, even this year with these big carryout projections. I think the corn balance sheet will be particularly sensitive to any weather issue. I mean, if you were to do the math, and I haven't done it yet, but say you took 5 to 10% off of a trendline yield in corn, you're probably left with a market that is severely undervalued here. So there is weather risk as we go into the summer, and that's kind of why I think that we could still build in some weather premium, maybe in all of these markets in the next 2 or 3 months.
Mike Zuzulo from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting.
Excited to see you all next week at the Beef House on the markets. I still feel as though the wheat's got to put the low in before anything else can go higher in a trending fashion. The cattle guys I've been talking to out here cannot understand why cattle are doing so well on weather, but wheat is not. So I think here again, this wheat market is a key to unlocking the door to a trend change.
That's Tuesday at the Beef House, willag.org, 800-898-1065 to join us. Elaine Cubb, your final thoughts.
Yeah, there does seem to be this sort of general feeling throughout, not just the grains, but commodities in general, that some lows are being put in. And that might bring in some speculators and it might get some upward momentum. I'm not terribly bullish. I don't want folks to get really bulled up and miss good opportunities, but there are reasons perhaps, you know, to stay neutral.
And Chad Hart from Iowa State.
Well, and that's the deal. I think there are some reasons to be a little bit bullish out there, but know that at the end of the month, we're going to get that prospective plantings report. And I think a lot is going to hinge on that as we do try to figure out this acreage dance out there, what are farmers thinking as they look at not only the weather conditions, but what's happening with the prices among the markets there. And can we see some swings? You know, the thought process here is being, okay, if beans is going to lose that acreage, where's it going to go? Corn's been the target, at least from USDA's perspective. Will it continue to be as we move through March?
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like. The whole of our program can be found there. It's at willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Mike Zuzlow at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, Chad Hart from Iowa State University in Ames, Iowa, Joe Vaklovic from Standard Grain in Gallatin, Tennessee, and Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets out of Elkhorn, Nebraska. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.